Welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. It is April 12th, 2018, and that pause was me checking because I couldn't remember. I'm your host, James Jones. With me today is Mr. John Lindemann.
James, I encourage you to adjust your microphone anytime and any way you see fit.
That's not even in the audio, John. You can't just fucking drop weird, like, irreverent statements that don't help.
You wanted a reverence. This is what you wanted.
I do want a reverence. You know what? No. Again, not in the audio. You can't prove it. You can't prove anything. None of this happened. There's no object permanence if no one could observe it.
I've already thrown you. You're already off.
As far as the audience knows, none of this has ever happened, John. Also joining them, Mr. Guillaume Vaillette.
And yeah, I hope people are hearing this, because if not, it means, I don't know, something happened with my computer.
It means we don't exist.
No, just the file is gone. We still exist.
Prove it.
Well, I don't know. to quote Subsurface Circular, I process, therefore I am. It's very deep.
Last but not least, Mr. Greg Leahy.
Ahoy, ahoy, everyone.
It is episode 567, and we're going to get right down to it because we did not do that so far. We're going to have a relatively short episode. John and I don't really have any games to talk about, and we just kind of wanted to keep this one a little bit brief. So aiming for a one segment, probably just some quick new business, and then we'll roll into a couple listener mail. So we're going to go ahead and get started right away. Guillaume, what have you been up to?
Sure. So I've been playing a little bit of Rime on the Switch. And I say a little bit because I've been juggling way too many games lately.
I thought it was because it was the European DSi version. I bet the frame rate's really killer on that.
Oh, boy. No, it's on the Switch, and it's got the latest patch, which I had hoped would fix most of the problems. And initially, like, I started the game, and I was really surprised by how well the game ran. So I made some... maybe a little bit too early tweets about the surprisingly good performance of Rime on the Switch. And eventually I got to areas or cutscenes that, you know, made the frame rate slow to a crawl. But thankfully it never really happened in the middle of a jump or anything like that. Like, it never... It is distracting. And for sure, you're not getting the same performance as you would from, I'm guessing this is on the PC, but also on the PlayStation 4.
Yeah, it's on everything.
Right. So the Switch version is really the version you want if you want a portable version of that game. But otherwise, you're never going to get the performance out of it that you can get from other consoles. But it's still, I'm surprised how much I enjoy it, because I actually kind of hate Eco, and and this is so Eco, you know, like, this is like someone played Eco and it was like, oh, okay, yeah, I want to make also a game with kind of a little boy scampering up rocks simulator, and so that's what they made. And so you spend a lot of time just exploring these ruins and clambering. Is that a word, clambering? It's not quite climbing.
Clambering
yeah. up rocks and ledges, and just solving puzzles. And I'm pretty surprised at the variety of puzzles. Like, sure, like, you're pushing blocks a lot, but there have also been places where you're supposed to, like, there are perspective puzzles where you're supposed to stand in a certain place and line up different things to create a door where there shouldn't be one. So nice puzzle variety. I think one of the reasons why I'm enjoying it more than Eco is because, first, I'm not protecting anyone. You know, there's no NPC that I have to hold by the hand and carry around and stuff like that, which got a little bit annoying fast in Eco. And also, there's no combat so far. I don't know if it's going to stay that way, but I haven't found any sword, and it's looking like maybe I'm never going to pick one up. So I'm kind of crossing my fingers that there's no combat in this game, because this is great. Like I really enjoy just you know, figuring out the environmental puzzles and exploring and just admiring this island that they built. There's like a nice day and night cycle. The what's it called? The skybox at night is really, really pretty. It's a good looking game. And I've played it portably and on the TV, and it's about the same, you know, performance wise. It plays really well on the Switch screen. There have been times when during the night cycle, maybe it got a little bit too dark. But other than that, like, I'm really enjoying it. So hopefully I'll have time to play a little bit more of it, or to finish it before I have to return it. Another game that I've played, Neil reviewed Streets of Red for the website today. And Tesla versus Lovecraft is a great game. I've been playing it co-op with Karen. Unfortunately, the latest patch seems to have broken the survival mode in that game. There are leaderboards, and it used to be that you would last maybe, I don't know, like 5 to 10 minutes in survival mode was a good run. And now it's like it's almost hard to let yourself die. And so last night, like right after the patch, Karen and I played, and we lasted for upwards of half an hour, and we're just like, okay, like this is really getting boring. So we had to let ourselves get killed, and we were like second on the leaderboard at that time for the two-player co-op. So at this point, I decided maybe I need a new co-op game, and I tweeted that, and Neil sent me, like, apparently he had gotten two review codes, so I got the game for free, Streets of Red, which is a I guess it is a roguelite brawler. Of course, with a name like Streets of Red, you can tell that it's very Streets of Rage inspired, but mostly like the visually, it's closer probably to something like a pixelated Castle Crashers, like the same kind of like the small, short, little characters that you're controlling. In this game, you can't jump. You've got an attack button, and you've got a quote unquote defense button, which is really like your super attack. But you want to use your super attack anytime that you're surrounded, because, you know, because then you're going to free yourself from being surrounded. But also, you're going to get like certain bonuses if you can finish off enemies with a super attack. So I really enjoy that. It's a nice spin on the usual, kind of bullshit where your super attack actually hurts you when you use it, or when you've got limited times that you can use it. Here, it's like you're really encouraged to use it, and it's pretty cool. It's a perfect little game playing, in co-op, of course. Like, those games are always fun multiplayer. And I guess the roguelite element comes from the fact that each time that you finish a level, there are random kind of upgrades and perks that you can buy. Also, like, you can choose which level that you start with, and there's like sewers, a train, and all that good stuff. The order that you choose to tackle levels will make them shorter or longer. If you tackle the sewers first, you only do one level of that, and then the next that you pick, you're going to do two levels, and so on. So I guess like that adds a little bit of replay value, because you're not going to see everything there is to see in the game the first time through, and you can vary up. If there's a level that you really don't like as much as the others, then you pick it first and you play it less. It's perfect. And the game is very much it's very much an indie game, and by that I mean that it's not bad writing, but it's very much pandering to gamers, I suppose. The plot is that Only the attendees at BAX East 2018 have survived a zombie plague. And so they gain, and they're cosplayers, so they gain, they somehow gain powers based on their costumes. And so the characters that the character that I picked was a Shovel Knight inspired character. And I wasn't sure what magic and tech was going to be for Queenie, who the only girl in the gang that Karen could pick. Turns out that it's Terra from Final Fantasy VI. And, you know, with the... Is that Terra? Or am I confusing my Final Fantasies?
That was the localized name. It was like Tina in the Japanese version, I think.
Or... I think I'm thinking of Celis, like the at the very beginning with the Magitek armor.
No, Celis comes later. She's because there's some question over whether she's like still working for the Empire or it's been long time.
Oh, right.
Anyway,
yeah. Okay.
Terra's
Celis
the one
is
at the beginning
hybrid.
That's kind of enslaved.
Okay. Yeah. So she's Terra inspired and she's got the Magitek armor and everything. So that's pretty cool. And the levels so far have been very much. You know, like odds and nods to odds and nods. That's not the same.
If you hadn't said anything, I would have let it go. Yeah, I like it. Yeah. It sounds cool.
It's like bed knobs and broomsticks or something, man. I like it.
Yeah.
Nods and winks and, you know, references to, you know, nerdy shit. Like the sewer level ends with a mad scientist that turned himself into a fly, of course. And one of the levels also is like very much Resident Evil inspired, and the zombie dogs, of course, are just adorable, but very vicious. When you like further in that kind of mansion level, I guess like in the further stage, like you make your way back in the dark, and it's instead of being a Resident Evil homage, it's Ghostbusters. So. Yeah, like it's just piling on references, but it's fun so far. I'm really enjoying it.
You know, when people always complain that, and these are usually from people who do video game journalism, they always complain that video games aren't as refined as movies and literature. I always think they're talking out of their ass, but they're right. No movie or book would ever do that kind of nerd pandering.
Yeah,
ever,
I know, right?
Ever. Yeah, that would never ever happen.
Yep. Yeah, surely it wouldn't be successful.
It wasn't. It was only the number two movie in the box office.
The book was successful.
Yeah, it was.
Anyway. So it's been a ton of fun. And I had to stop to start recording, stop playing to start recording. And hopefully it stays of that quality. Like we were almost at the fourth and final level, which would have been longer than the other ones. So I don't know how much, you know, I guess a playthrough must be around like between 1 and 2 hours long. But then you just go through it again. Really enjoying it. And apparently like there are two unlockable characters that I haven't unlocked yet. So looking forward to that. Final thing that I wanted to mention for new business. I couldn't really find something to say about Burly Men at Sea. Last week, I was very confused as to the nature of the game. I was wondering if there was something I could unlock or figure out at some point in order to start the story differently, not get eaten up by a giant whale. And turns out that I was thinking too hard about it. The game just always starts the same way. And it kind of always ends the same way. Spoilers. Despite having like 12 different branches, story paths, it always kind of ends up with you going back to the island and starting over. And so I put my review on the website, and I gave it a 6 out of 10. Turns out that always kind of, you know, like no matter. Turns out that the journey maybe is not as important as what you get at the end, you know, like especially like when you know that it's always going to end up the same way, it kind of diminishes the whole thing, you know.
It cheats you a little bit of the significance of the moment.
Yeah, and also there's a the games for some reason doesn't lets you skip parts of the story that you already saw In the middle of the story, when you're like within like the branches that you can choose, but the ending and the beginning, you can't skip anything. So it's like literally like the two cutscenes that you will see the most in this game are the only ones that you can't skip. And it's like, what the hell? but it's really too bad because, you know, that 6 out of 10 is really mostly for the visuals and the music, which I found like really appropriate, really good, really goofy. But turns out that if you go on the developer's website, there's a link to Bandcamp where you can listen to the soundtrack. So, you know, go ahead and do that. And
foiled by our own music.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was disappointing. I did not go into it wanting to hate the game, but I don't know. Like I was Karen was away when I played through most of the paths in the game, and I asked her when she came back, like, hey, did you want to see what happens? And she was no. Like, kind of both of us like lost interest really quickly in where the game was going. So it's unfortunate.
Oh, that is a shame.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you giving us an update on it, though, because, you know, it did seem... I wasn't sure how branching the game really was, and it turns out that it's all that sort of illusion of choice. Well, at least people listening know now.
Yep.
Greg, what have you been up to?
Well, before we get to what I've been playing, we've got to touch on the fact that we've got a semi-recurring gag on this show about willing things into existence.
But usually not good things.
Oftentimes not what we would choose, presumably. It's a term in economics called revealed preferred, and if the things that I've quote-unquote willed into existence is my revealed preference, it doesn't say much for my preferences. But, so we did the Ikaruga ending music last week, and it must have been about a day or two later, apparently, Treasure were out there teasing Ikaruga showing up on the Switch. So is it another case of this? Who can say?
Maybe they just listen to the show.
Maybe they do.
Don't understand a word of it because they don't speak English, but they're listening.
They heard the music at the end. Oh, yeah.
I know that song. Did we make that game?
It does also. It did make me think. I wondered, had Guillaume been accused yet of willing Spike into the new Mario Tennis game?
Yeah, I don't know, but it's just amazing. I sure heard about it when it was announced, though.
Sure did.
Well, it wasn't announced, was it? I guess it was just
a popular person on Twitter tweeted about it, and everyone just... The news spread surprisingly fast, and I guess it was gaming news in a way, which is weird.
Because it is weird.
A character doesn't exist be news?
Because I guess the weird part of it is that, you know, it did feel like you were the only person that noticed Spike being in that Mario Party game.
Right, but someone else did.
Yeah, now someone else is not. I guess it's just a different bar for tennis.
So I want to point out the reason Bubsy exists, the new one, is because people couldn't understand irony, and those people happened to control the Bubsy license.
I thought he was going to blame one of us for willing it into existence.
No,
exactly,
I don't
right? I didn't know where he was going with it.
If anyone misinterpreted commentary on Spike as a groundswell of enthusiasm, I need to help you understand that Spike is a non-entity, and any commentary on him is simply a commentary on his non-entityness. He's such a non-entity that he shows up in like 2 games simply to be not even a major impediment, just kind of a minor one.
Yeah. Well, when he was announced for Mario Tennis, I went to the website, to Nintendo World Report, and I downloaded the highest res Spike art that I could find. And it's now my phone wallpaper.
I've decided
to embrace the being associated with this quote unquote character.
That's what you get. That's what you get for noticing them, like just slipping, you know, a character. It's like
could we put some effort into a cast? It's just too spike, no one will notice. And then, you know, you've noticed, and now they've got to, like, retcon it by putting him in Maritain. Oh, no, we meant to use it. He's a good character, you know.
He's the equivalent of Kirby, but not charming. And it's like they didn't finish drawing a Koopa, and they're like, well, this is Spike, I guess.
Yeah, we put him in due to fan response, meaning one
put
fan
some
response.
Put hair on him and call it a day.
Yep, so beware what we think of next.
I've known that for years.
If we can put, I don't know, Silhouette Mirage music at the end of a future episode or something, because Ikaruga is already on Steam, and I'm not against putting Ikaruga on more machines, but I would appreciate if Treasure could offer us like something else from their catalog. I'm guessing Ikaruga is just maybe technically or in terms of like the rights, probably the easiest game to port for them. But
yeah, because it's been on 360, and then that's on the backwards compatibility with Xbox One as well. I mean, it's one of the most widely available of their things, I guess. So it's probably got some of the most cachet,
right,
as well, you know, so yeah. So it probably has done relatively well for them in that capacity, so I get it. And of course there's the vertical thing that we've talked about many times with Switch, which would also apply to Radiant Silvergun, the sort of predecessor to Ikaruga, but not so much to their console stuff. But yeah, I mean, I Silhouette Mirage, I've got the PS1 classic version of that off Japanese PSN, but it's not been what obviously the Saturn version was better for a start. That would have been nice. I would certainly, there's plenty of Treasure stuff that would be nice to get, for the first time, or more widely available. It wouldn't be at the top of my list, but you know, considering their relative inactivity these days, it's nice to hear anything out of them, to be honest.
Yeah.
Just to put a bow on it, we are never playing Mylan's Secret Castle music ever. Ever, John. Ever.
Yeah, well, just wait. I will host this show again, James. And
oh, yeah.
Well, I'm going to make you play it,
technically,
John.
It's a different show when you host it.
Just keep looking over your shoulder. That's all I can say. I just need one opportunity.
If they make a Mylan's Secret Castle remake or sequel or reboot, I'm going to make you play it. And there is no threat worse than that.
I'll pre-order it for you.
To completion.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yep.
So we'll never see John again, because he'll die of starvation before he checks every single square in the game to find the end.
I'm on board. Totally on board with that.
Moving away from our dark powers, Greg.
Yeah. I've been playing Mummy Demastered. This was on sale in that sale I mentioned that they had on the European eShop a bit ago. But again, I've mentioned this before, a lot of the time the sale's not even necessarily the critical point in terms of the actual price drop. It's more, A, it reminds me it exists, and B, increasingly, it's a case of knowing about it when it's been patched. Because Switch stuff, we already talked about Rhyme. There's a fairly decent track record of, not necessarily huge things, but at least somewhat significant things being wrong with it when it arrives. And with the Mummy Demastered, when that came out at the back end of last year, Neil reviewed it for us, and he kind of covered some of the things that were wrong with it then. I think probably if anybody does remember anything of the sort of glitches or the bugs in it at that time, it would be that the last boss like just totally messed up, basically. So,
good. No, that's a feature.
Yeah, that was a problem. And also there was some performance things or whatever. And then also, just apart from the kind of those obvious kind of issues, they did some rebalancing, I guess, based on user feedback about some of the systems in the game and whatnot. So it probably is a somewhat significantly different experience from what it was when it originally came out on Switch at the back end of last year. But for those who don't know, this is developed by WayForward, of Shantae sort of fame, if you like, and plenty of other stuff too. And as far as me, even WayForward, I will almost always look at a WayForward game and think that looks cool. But I purchase fewer of the games than I think look cool, because sometimes it just doesn't quite seem like the substance is quite there. I've only played one of the Shantae games, the Pirate's Curse, which is really, really good. But he always sounds like the others, or some of the you know, are not quite up to that standard. But then, you know, it's not just that. I mean, I've enjoyed from them. I mean, stuff like A Boy and His Blob on Wii, the Mighty Switch Force games. You know, I've played a fair, you know, Contra 4, going back to that on DS. You know, I've played plenty of their stuff, and the visuals are almost always cool. You know, whether it's pixel art, you know, that hand animated style with Boy and His Blob, you know, it chances are it's going to look good, because that is their kind of expertise, really. But in this case, like I said, the reviews were a little bit dinged at the time for some of these issues, but there was also kind of, you know, somewhat middling kind of view of it, I think, because it didn't quite kind of tick all the boxes for what it was going for. This is very much a Metroid style game. In this case, though, you know, you've got this kind of I guess the Konami, you know, they've done work for Konami in the past, and there's a strong Konami influence, because it does kind of feel like a Contra Castlevania mashup, basically, you know, kind of very much being themed around the Mummy movie that came out last year, and you know, which was meant to tie all the Universal movie monsters together or whatever.
Right.
You know, it's very much a Castlevania kind of lineup in terms of baddies and all that kind of thing. But you're playing as this, like, you know, I haven't seen the movie, so I wouldn't know how to pronounce it. Prodigium agent going around shooting stuff, you know, so it's just like Paranormal Shield, basically. And they, you know, that's got a much more of a Contra kind of vibe. You know, with your primary weapon is just like a kind of machine gun. You'll get other sort of weapons that you can find that do a lot of damage, like rocket launchers and shotguns and all this. You could kind of clamber up on ceilings in a very kind of Contra way, you know, hang down and shoot from them, all that. So, you know, it sounds like the kind of thing that I would really like, straight, you know, mash up Contra and Castlevania, I'm in, and it looks really nice, as you'd expect. So I've definitely had my eye on this, and then the sale comes along and the patches, and it's, yeah, this is the time to go for it, and I enjoyed it. It's quite short. It, again, you know, this was something that kind of came up when it was reviewed initially, but I'm quite happy with that, really. The, you know, the fact that it doesn't overstay its welcome. It's probably not substantial enough in terms of gameplay and design to warrant being any longer. So I'm quite happy that it is the length that it is. Compared to other games of its type, there's a few sort of things to bear in mind. It's definitely more to the action, kind of, as you might expect, being kind of the Contra influence. It's definitely more to the action end of the spectrum than exploration, you know, compared to something like an Axiom Verge or a Metroid, because, you know, I said you've got that kind of run and gun action. It's definitely not as much so as something like Aliens Infestation, if anybody remembers that from DS that Wayfarer did.
I played half of it and kind of lost interest.
That felt like almost like it was trying to take the cover shooting that was becoming popular in console third person shooters of the time and translate it into a 2D game. Whereas this is much more traditional, you know, old school running and gunning, but, you know, in a exploratory, you know, Metroid style world. So, you know, it's faster paced and just more playable than somewhat enjoyed Aliens Infestation. I did play it to the end, but it certainly wasn't one of my favourite Way Forward games. And I like this better, certainly. But, you know, it's, like I said, it's not particularly intricate in terms of the level design and the interconnections between areas or like environmental puzzles. It's kind of light on that component of the Metroid formula, and it's more about action and some platforming. You know, I mean, I don't want to overestimate the kind of similarity to classic Castlevania, because that's got very stodgy platforming, you know, like really got, you know, the immobile character and stuff. And obviously in this, your character becomes increasingly mobile as you get power ups and whatnot. But even the basic mobility is nicer than that. But yeah, there's, I think Neil touched on it in his review, you know, there were some sections that were kind of like your precision platforming or whatever that seemed out of place in this kind of game, and I kind of get what he means. But for me, you know, I came to Super Metroid having not played the original Metroid or other kind of exploratory games. I came to it more from a kind of run and gun perspective, or like a Castlevania perspective, so I never really kind of mind games, you know, having those elements in them, especially if they're not like really drawn out, you know, and there's like fairly prevalent kind of save locations and all that kind of thing. So I didn't mind that little old school kind of twist being in here in a game of this type, but some people might, because very often in games of this type you're either kind of a floating godlike thing like Samus, you know, especially towards the end of Metroid games, or it's kind of Castlevania, you know, Igavania games, and there isn't really that much platforming because it's just corridors. You know, right. So yeah, it's you know, it's neither one of those quite. It's a little bit more like the kind of taking a classic action game and expanding it into a more open structure. So, you know, that kind of thing tilts more towards my taste, but you know, you might not like that about it. I could see Neil's point there for other people who aren't as tolerant of action, classic action games, as I am. But you know, in terms of some of the other components of the action, the bosses are kind of good but not great. You're pretty cool to look at, have the whole kind of zooming out, have the large scale kind of fight, you know, and the pixel art looks really great in that setting and all that kind of thing. But patterns wise, you know, not too kind of dynamic or clever, you know, just not pushovers either. I mean, that was the only case, these were the only cases where I died in the game, is playing the bosses, which is, you know, a subject we'll kind of continue on in a bit. So they definitely had some challenge, but it very much was, once you kind of sussed it out, the routine, there wasn't much else to it. It wasn't, I certainly wouldn't put it in a, you know, treasure kind of category of boss fights or anything like that, but you know, decent. And then in terms of the things you're finding and the, and how you're empowering the character, there's a number of things that you know, very simple, just, you know, increasing your health and all that kind of ammo, that kind of stuff. Then there are some things that are optional, you know, in the sense that they, you don't need them to kind of critical path the game, but are useful, like nullifying knockback, for instance, is one, which I can imagine if you are someone that doesn't like some of the conventions of the classic action games that inspired The Mummy Demastered, you'd very much appreciate knockback getting taken out. So I can only imagine. But you could also, you know, go to the last boss without knowing that that power-up is in there. So there's definitely some, you know, it's not just like a totally linear game, like dressed up as something more open. You know, there are things out there that you know, rewards for poking around, that, you know, you will be more powerful, you will you know, have these perks like that, but at the same time there's also a certain number of collectibles in the game that seem completely extraneous, almost like they didn't know what to put in there, but they just put in something. There's these relics that yeah, there's like 50 of them, and a lot of them are just kind of hidden in destructible components of the environment. Some are a little more clever, a little bit more like what you'd expect from a Metroid game, getting a missile expansion or something, where there's a, you know, an environmental puzzle or, you know, something that you realise you could come back with once you have a certain ability and get it later, that kind of thing. But others are just there, you know, in a very sort of scavenger hunty kind of way, and I've got almost all of them now, and as far as I'm aware there is no reward or payoff for having all of them or any number of them. They're just there to be found, which, you know, can be fun in itself, but feels a little bit weak, a bit half-baked, to be honest, that they're so kind of token in a very real sense. Definitely the fact that this is a licensed game, and I don't know, you know, I'm sure they put a lot of effort into it and whatnot, but probably didn't have the longest development time. It was already a few months after the movie, wasn't it?
Right.
When it came out, I guess it'd be debatable whether it could have got pushed that much farther out. But
that is a movie that fell like a thud.
Yeah,
so.
That's the thing. Maybe it didn't really matter that it was a few months later. Maybe it could have been more months later, but, you know, I mean, there's plenty of other logistical concerns that go into these things. But, like I say, it doesn't feel like a huge development project. But, yeah, mostly quite well executed for what it's trying to do, but not terribly ambitious. You know, the design is not as clever as intricate as a Metroid, you know, at its best, or an Axiom Verge, you know, for instance. But, you know, with the fixes they've made, the biggest one being the death stuff, I think it can be very enjoyable. Now, with the death system originally, and this reminds me a little bit of Aliens Infestation, I don't really remember exactly how that worked at this point, because it was like 10 years ago or whatever. But anyway.
A long time.
It was a while. And with this, it's okay. If you die, nameless agent is kind of taken over by the dark powers that you're going up against, and then you take over, you know, as another nameless agent who you what you're trying to do is go and find the corpse of that guy and kill it and take back your stuff. Now, originally, I think one of the harsh things was that even when you did, yeah, and of course, as you're doing this, you haven't got your stuff, so you're much less powerful, you know, than you're used to being. And certainly as the game goes on, you know, you think, yeah, this guy's really tooled up at this point, because I've collected rocket launchers and God knows what else. So, you know, there's a little bit of a tension element in it. But originally, even now, I mean, but originally it was more so, I would assume, because even when you, if you killed it, you would get like half your health back or stuff like that. So then, you know, there was some complaints about the fact that, you know, not only have you got to sort of trek to find where you die to kill your kind of old self and take back your stuff, but even then you haven't got all your stuff. So if you've died on a boss fight, you might want to, you know, kind of grind your health back up by killing enemies and all this kind of thing. So yeah, they address that by saying, well, at least, you know, when you kill the full myself, you get all your health back. You're kind of almost fully powered. You still only have, I think, about half your ammo. But the thing about the ammo is you've always got your basic weapon. Your basic weapon has infinite ammo. It's the guns you find that have consumable ammo that are, yeah, sort of more extravagant, more powerful, you know, and they have sort of different specialties in terms of, you know, some are good for killing individual enemies quickly, others are good for crowd control type of scenarios with little pests. But I guess the thing about it is, if you learn, even against bosses, to kind of pick good times to, I describe it as eat your vegetables, which is basically to do bits with your sort of standard not that great gun, then, you know, the limitations of the ammo is not that big a deal. You know, if you can learn to say, okay, these bits or these enemies I can take out with the standard gun, you'll have ammo to finish things off with your consumable better guns. And of course, as the game goes on, you get more guns that are more powerful, and you get more ammo and all this. It becomes even less and less of a problem, and you can just cut. Certainly by the end, with one of the guns, which is like some sort of God version of a proton pack from Ghostbusters or something, you everything's dying on screen so fast, and they've got a lot of ammo to play with even still. So that, yeah, there's a decent empowerment path there, but yeah, they toned it down a little bit, and you do get to a point where it's like, okay, you've toned it down, probably people are happier with that. But also, it's like, is it bringing anything to the party anymore? I mean, is there a point to this anymore? You know, if you've kind of diluted it, I mean, would it just be better to excise the concept altogether? It does seem like the kind of thing that's more like about, you know, it was a cool founding concept than it is a sort of terribly consequential mechanic in practice or something that actually adds to the game. But, you know, I will say, for me, it did make me a lot more conscious of not dying during exploration than I normally am in this sort of game. In Metroid games, where, you know, which are often quite easy, I could be quite careless of just like, look, I'm exploring, I'm just going to push forward, I'm not going to, you know, stand here and wait for enemies to come out and absorb a bunch of health, I'm just going to keep pushing forward, and if I die, I die, I don't really care. Whereas in this, the fact that it was some sort of hypothetical punishment did make me play more carefully, even though it never really stung me unless I was playing a boss where, you know, you've always got a save point nearby, so it's not particularly onerous. So I guess, you know, it did something. It kind of modified my playstyle a bit, but it didn't feel that consequential either. And certainly, you know, from reading what Neil wrote and all, it doesn't seem like it really added that much to the experience before the patch or whatever. So yeah, not a particularly great choice, but I don't think it should put people off, especially now, if the rest of the package sounds kind of appealing to you. So in the end, I enjoyed it. So it kind of reminds me of Transformers Devastation from Platinum, in that it's short, sweet, kind of gives you a lot of the kind of signature things about that developer, you know, what you like about them, but it's by far, you know, not the best sort of thing that they do. But you know, we might say a pleasant surprise given a licensed property.
Yeah. Well, and I was, when this got announced, I was kind of surprised, I guess is the word, because it feels like a light, even the game itself, it feels like this weird shot out of the Super Nintendo.
Oh yeah, it's very much like a nostalgia thing of like, hey, remember when these big summer movies like had to have a 2D side scrolling shooter or platforming tie-in with it? That's what it felt like to me, which is weird because yeah, we're so far beyond that now. But
yeah, because that was like the worst of gaming at that point. Like,
yeah, it was like really, a lot of them were bad, and a lot, yeah, of people presumably have like negative connotations, you know, with that to some extent, but
there's just so many of them.
Yeah,
like nobody's nostalgic for Stargate for the Super Nintendo. It's a piece of shit. You wouldn't ever want to be. Wasn't there the Dracula movie that De Niro starred in? Didn't that get a Super Nintendo game?
De Niro was in Frankenstein.
Oh, you're right. No, what was the Dracula movie that came out?
Gary Oldman.
Dracula.
Yeah. I think
that had a number of good. Wasn't there a CD one that's kind of infamous? And yeah, I mean, there were a bunch of weird movie tie-ins back then.
And they're all bad.
And so many of them were bad, you know. I mean, it was a real turn up for the books when something was good, you know. So it's kind of an interesting play from that point of view. But
Dick Tracy from the NES was an abomination.
Now, I barely played any of them, especially because when we moved to...
played all of them.
When we moved to, you know, to Super Famicom and import and stuff like that, it was like, okay, you know, nothing's cheap. This shit better be... if we're going to buy it, it better be good. You know? So, movie tie-ins that were knocked out, you know, to cash in on stuff was not going to get picked.
Here's my offer to you: an NES-era multimodal game including a strategy, sword fighting, and dungeon crawling based on a Robin Hood movie with an actor who can't do an English accent.
Yeah, so it wasn't Morgan Freeman playing like...
an Arab, yes.
Yes, that's right, yeah. That's interesting casting in that movie.
What a terrible, amazing movie and a terrible game. All right, we don't really have much else in the way of new business. We're actually just going to go ahead and get through some listener mail. We've got some shorter ones. I'm going to keep an eye on the clock for these two gentlemen, but since John and I haven't really spoken, which is probably for the best, to be honest, but I'm just going to go ahead and tempt fate by letting us talk. So John, I would like to have you read Cyrus's email.
Cyrus writes, "Hey, my fellow Nintendo dudes, I was wondering, how do you like your video game announcements relative to their release date? A, it's coming out sometime within a year. B, it's coming out at this exact date a few months from now. C, it's coming eventually, like maybe next year, maybe 2 years, we're definitely working on it. Or D, and you can buy it right now, because fuck real marketing."
the bold Sega Saturn North American launch strategy.
Yeah, the funny thing is, you could pretty much map this. You could map these approaches to certain companies.
Well, so to be fair about the Sega Saturn, though, it had a date, and then they just said, "Fuck it, it's out."
Yeah.
On not that date, which is bold. It's a bold decision, and I appreciate it. It's no bold decisions are frequently also bad decisions, but the Sega Saturn is often like, oh, the release date thing, but no, Sega Saturn was fucked. Like, it just was.
It was a bad idea.
It was a bad product. It was the wrong product for the time, and it cost too much.
All right,
and it didn't have the games. It's all around problem.
So let's go here. So A, it's coming out sometime within a year is what probably Microsoft, I would say. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, probably also Nintendo. That's been their MO recently.
Now that we're free of the Wii U.
We've kind of covered, with Nintendo, it oscillates according to their fortunes in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. You know,
sure.
If they're struggling, then it could be 2-3 years hence, like Yoshi's Woolly World and TMS.
Xenoblade. We're going to show you like a clip from the opening movie. And that's all you're getting.
Whereas when it's like the E3 where they show off DKC Returns, it's like that. Here it is. It's coming in a few months.
Yeah. See, right. I was thinking Nintendo is more B. It's coming on an exact.
Yeah.
Day like
peak Nintendo is B.
Yeah.
For sure.
Right. Yep.
I mean, we got a Smash Brothers announcement.
Yep.
In the same year it's coming out. That in and of itself sometimes feels like, oh hey, we're gonna get it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We're not counting all the rumors before then. Like, it's
no,
a game that everyone knew was, being worked on, was
sure.
going to come out. But they waited to announce
they're
it.
They're going to show it at E3 for the first time.
True.
And allegedly it will come out this holiday season.
C is very much, you kind of think of Sony or maybe Square Enix, because you think of Last Guardian.
No, because we say maybe it will come out in 2 years, eventually.
Yeah.
But Square
know.
Enix,
they're...
I don't know if that's true.
No,
yeah,
but
they've been announcing stuff that hasn't come out like 5 years ago or something. Like,
yeah, that they'll say, oh, it's coming, as it says there, maybe next year, maybe the year after that, but it's coming, and then that turns into like 5 or another console generation.
I think it's been 2 years since we've seen Final Fantasy VII Remake at all.
Yeah, yep.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Yep.
By the way, what is Criterion working on for EA? Like, have we ever seen that Freebase, whatever game that they were working on that was supposed to be...
Good question.
I don't know if it exists.
Did they work on Burnout Paradise Remastered?
I'm sure they at least were involved.
Yeah, I don't know.
Probably.
They were involved in Battlefront too, though. Like they had a role in the Battlefront games. They had that Need for Speed. Was it like Rivals a few years back? they've been around, but yeah, I don't know that game they were working on has been seen.
So for D, you can buy it right now. I mean, like, obviously a Saturn, but there's also freaking Square Enix, which did that with... I thought I had a trend there, but really just the one game, Romancing Saga 2. They announced like 2 weeks before it came out around Christmas on Switch. And it's like, okay, you're giving me like a 30-hour RPG or whatever. You're giving me 2 weeks heads up. It's not enough. I can't fit it in my life. Like I had other plans.
Yeah, it's interesting for me. If I'm picking my favorite, because sometimes you might say, well, immediacy is better in general. Certainly, like surety about when it's coming out is better. C is always the worst because it's like, well, this exists, but or if even I'll get to play it is like an open question. So
now the internet loves that though.
Yeah, it's good fodder.
It is.
But it's not something I actually like myself. I would go with A, because it's like, okay, we're kind of putting a time frame on it within a year, or like within the year, like in the case of Smash Brothers just recently. But it's like long enough to kind of get pumped for it if it's something that really matters to you.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of a nice balance.
Yeah, the thing is, I like to know that stuff is coming out. And so what always gets me is when we bounce between. So, like, we'll do the, hey, we're going to announce a bunch of games super, super early. And then we're going to move towards not announcing early. And then you have this weird period of like, okay, the games they've announced are out. And what's coming? And we kind of had that coming into this year, where like Nintendo had gone and just hammered out all their things, and then it was like, okay, well, what's there on the horizon for us now? And like, well, Yoshi's coming, and I'm like, okay, we talked about Yoshi. There's another Kirby game, and we're like, help us out here. And then eventually they said, okay, well, Smash is coming. Here's a teaser, and like. There's still some holes in the calendar, but it's that weird transition of, like, I always have something to look forward to towards, like, oh, well, now I'm kind of... If it was consistent, like, hey, we tell you about a game about a year before it comes out. So we're hearing about the game set to come out in March 2019. We're hearing about it maybe in, like, April the previous year. And we're just consistently getting new announcements, and we kind of always have a kind of a rough estimate of what's in front. That's pretty good. But keep in mind, Pokemon will have been announced well over a year before it comes out.
Oh, yeah. Well, and again, I mean, the nature of it is...
Metroid might be 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, the nature of it is often a tip-off. Where, you know, whatever they say about time frames, but, you know, where if it's a guy at a desk or a logo... Then, you know,
it's a logo using music from a previous game.
Chances are it's quite a way off.
Yep.
But it's that weird inconsistency, I think, from them.
And that's the thing. Also, that's a case, the sort of dichotomy between those two is kind of, you know, it's one of these things. With Metroid, I get it with the logo, Metroid Prime 4, because it's like that's something that people had grown to fear would never exist. Because it had been a long time, and Metroid is not a blockbuster in any incarnation necessarily. Whereas with Pokemon, it's like, do I really need the suit to tell me it's okay? There's a Pokemon game coming to Switch.
Exactly.
Such an investor thing rather than let's film the guy for a Nintendo Direct at his desk doing it. It's kind of more risible, I mean, in that case.
The problem was that they had just announced the 3DS game and people were reacting.
Yeah, I get it. No, I get what.
But it would have gone under the bridge. I mean, I guess that was the same fear that led to Metroid Prime 4 being announced, because they're like, we're about to announce a 2D Metroid remake. Are people going to go like, it's on 3DS? What the fuck?
Yeah, we've talked about that. Discussion before that this whole kind of, some people have this very kind of negative association with anything being on 3DS, the idea of it being stuck on 3DS. So I can see why they would want to, you know, counteract that or alleviate it. But it just, you know, it could come off, if that's the same kind of announcement, but it comes off differently given the context of the series, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess for me now, a year is about good. Like, you know, I want to have a pretty good view of what's down the road, but I don't want to start hearing about shit. I don't want you to walk somebody on stage to announce a Kickstarter. Sony.
And for me,
everyone involved in that should catch some kind of horrible illness.
Yeah, I mean, for me
that
too.
They never get to sheik off until that game comes out.
Yeah, for me, a year is far enough out where if it gets delayed, it's not so close that I think it's a big deal, you know?
Right. But if you announce that you're going to announce a game, you are the worst.
Yeah, pretty much.
You are the bleeding ulcer of the games industry.
We're going to announce a countdown page to the announcement of our game. That's one of my favorites.
The worst is we're going to have a countdown page, and then it's the countdown page is just a time when an event's going to happen later. Mm-hmm. That's the worst.
No, I think that the worst is when the countdown page is just, you know, vague enough that you might think that you're getting a sequel to The World Ends With You, but turns out it's a countdown to the announcement of the mobile port, which is a thing that happened.
Oh, it did. I mean, Square Enix had a few bad countdowns, but they did have the one where it was a countdown and the reveal was the date they were going to announce something.
Yes, I remember that.
It's like, you fuckers, why would you do that?
A countdown to a date reveal.
Yeah, that's the worst.
See, that's the kind of thing, if Suda did it, it would be self-aware audience trolling.
Right.
When Squares does it, it's just fucking incompetent.
Yeah, if Suda did it, it would be a countdown to another countdown. Like, he'd be like, okay, and now I'm revealing my new page called countdowns.com. And it would just have multiple countdowns announcing different parts of the URL for the actual announcement.
So, okay. So let me ask this. There's been the announcement that the Spyro Reignited Trilogy is coming out to PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. So that was announced a few weeks ago, and then hours after the announcement, apparently the game showed up on a Nintendo site's page. For the Nintendo's official UK store had a page for it.
The one complicating factor with that is that Nintendo does not run that store really themselves. It's it's contracted out. But obviously it's a partnership, they're licensed, but it's a retail group over here that does a bunch of online stores, the Hut Group, Zavvi.com. They run that store on Nintendo's website, for them. So I guess, it's not the suspicion of inside information is not as kind of cut and dry in that case, but still,
and
I mean, I would say
that the likelihood actually of Nintendo or Nintendo Direct affiliate botching that badly would be, there would be consequences. And it's one thing when a retailer does it, because what are you going to do? Like, are you going to go drop the hammer on Walmart? No. You obviously cannot do that. But like internally, if they were really holding it back, I feel like that would be that wouldn't have happened, because it would have been known to. They probably wouldn't have even told the person doing the website the game exists until they needed to know, and that was not the moment they needed to know. But yeah, the fact it's run by, especially because it's run by a retail chain group, that they were probably just creating the profile, and they probably have one database that runs all these websites' game profiles, and somebody just jammed Spyro in there for Switch.
I see. I don't know. I wouldn't rule out the possibility that.
It's probably eventually it's coming, because Crash Trilogy is coming.
Right.
Oh, so
So is that are they just giving it time to breathe, the Crash Trilogy, or is it I don't know.
It's an interesting question. Yeah, the fact that it's not, but I guess isn't that also true with Xbox? Right, Crash is not out on Xbox yet.
Right.
But they have announced Spyro for Xbox, so but perhaps somebody thought in the Nintendo case it would be better if they were spaced out or something. Who knows? But
maybe they feel like there's more of a market for Crash than there is for Spyro or something. I don't know.
Mm.
I mean, granted, one of those characters is a non-entity. The other character is best known for being a toy that was ultimately consumed by other toys in his line. So, one of them did Pizza Hut commercials. Maybe that's the connection. The connection is Pizza Hut.
It's all coming together.
We've solved the great Illuminati scheme of our time. It's the Bigfoot pizza scheme.
I do remember the Night in the Woods developer at some point announced that the collector's edition version of the game was going to come out soon for PlayStation 4 and Xbox and PC, and they kind of threw in their tweet and some other console that were not some other platform we're not contractually allowed to talk about yet. And it's just I don't know, it just seemed weird, because if you're then after that tweet, the game came out on Switch. What's wrong with me? The game came out on Switch. Yeah. Anyway, the game came out like, you know, a couple of months later, and it's just it just seems like so many game announcements are come very quickly, like in the C scenario, or D scenario, it's out right now. And I'm kind of wondering, if it's something that Nintendo is doing that's kind of...
Some of it is. Obviously, Nintendo wants, for a lot of independent games, wants to talk about them. And in fact, Nintendo did talk about Night in the Woods.
Sure.
But some of it is likely tied to this very, very well might be the first game this publisher's ever put out on a Nintendo system or has put out in a decade. And that there really is stuff they're still working through, like licensing stuff that has to happen. It'll be interesting as, you know, as year two rolls on, if we see second efforts don't subscribe to the same policy.
Referenced there makes me think of a potential E category for Cyrus, which would be, and you can buy it right now, or on a day later you can't, because if you do see about the pinball arcade in America, it went up very suddenly. It was like, okay, oh yep, it's going to be out tomorrow. And then it was out tomorrow, and then virtually a day later, it was pulled down because that's some sort of licensing snafu. You know, they hadn't worked it all out, and they had to withdraw it from sale. And as of the time of this recording, it's not back up yet. I'm sure it will be. It's kind of like, yeah, if not E, shall we say D minus?
F plus. Yeah, I mean, because some of it could just be a matter of licensing the middleware for Switch development. It may not even be a Nintendo problem. It may be like we have to get whatever in a row just to get our ports ready for Switch. And that we're literally just sitting on it because we don't want to drop the announcement. And so we're like, yes, it's 100% ready. Let's go. But then again, we had like the Undertale announcement, which was like, it's coming, I don't know, fuck it, sometime.
Yeah, it was very playfully like, yep, eventually kind of thing. Yeah, it's very bizarre.
Yeah, and to the point where people asking about it online were met with, I don't know, did you see that Smash announcement? That was cool. It's like, well, it's like, okay, well, fine. I think it probably comes a lot down to the individual publisher / developer, especially when you're dealing with these smaller games. I mean, the No More Heroes Travis Strikes Again, whatever it's called, was announced before it seemingly even existed. So
I mean, the one thing I would say about the Undertale thing that does kind of make me think, I wonder if in some cases with Switch, especially, like maybe there's some announcements that would be like way ahead of time just because they're tired of people asking for it. People on social media, like kind of like, is it happening? Is it happening? Is it happening? It's like, well, we could have waited a month to, you know, before release to announce it, but then we would have had like another 10 months of, is it happening? Is it happening?
Yes. I do want to do one quick note before we move on about the Travis Strikes Again demo. Apparently, in the end of it, there's a boss, and when you beat the first form of the boss during the GDC demo, it said something like, "But you'll never beat my next form at PAX." And then at the PAX demo, it was there, and then apparently it did it again, which I appreciate. Just like trolling in your actual just stage demo. Oh, you're gonna have to go on tour to finish my game. That's so good. All right. We need to move on to the next email. I will read it. Jordan writes, "Hey guys, SNK Collection was announced today as coming to Switch later this year. And with 3 Mega Man collections also coming to Switch, I wonder if these packages, along with the classic mini consoles, are foreshadowing the death of the virtual console as we know it. It seems like we might just get a few online-enabled games that come with an... It seems like we might just get a few online-enabled games that may in one day come with the Nintendo Online subscription service, maybe possibly if Nintendo doesn't change their mind again. Love the show. looking forward to your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, certainly lends credence to the fact that we are definitely going to get new versions of old games with online components. I mean, absolutely. I think it's a, slam dunk.
Zelda will will absolutely have leaderboards.
For sure.
Yuichi was the dumbest idiot in the world right now. Moving on. So what it tells me is that companies don't want to deal with Nintendo's, like, stranglehold on publishing their old games anymore. Like, we could do it ourselves. We don't need Nintendo's virtual console service to make it happen. Yeah. And we could put it fucking everywhere.
And they sell. So.
Yeah. Yes. And
although, again, I mean, this is another case of, like, with Switch stuff, just talked about Spyro, but, like, the Sega Genesis thing is another one where it's like, surely this is coming to Switch eventually.
Oh, yeah. Eventually.
But we have, but there's, you know, it hasn't been confirmed, and we don't really. It is a pattern, to go back to the last question, and I do wonder exactly what Nintendo's role in it is, or what's going on there.
It could be entirely possible that Nintendo decided that being the middleman for all of these companies' virtual console stuff just wasn't something they wanted to do anymore, mm-hmm. and that these companies were already putting together these packages to release them on other consoles. And so the answer became simply a matter of, well, just let them do that here too. Don't do the virtual console stuff. Just let it go. And we'll deal with it that way. Is Mega Man Legacy Collection 1 and 2 being sold individually on the eShop? I know it's a bundle if you buy the physical, but you have to download this collection too. Because I think that means there's actually four Mega Man.
Four, yeah, because X is split into two.
But I wonder if this is actually a subtle jab at that split for Mega Man X Collection 2.
Yeah, the back end of the X Collection is not well thought of. The second X Collection, the games there's, in it. Yeah.
There's like one okay game, one decent game, one disaster, and then one like, ugh. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I mean, of course, Street Fighter is coming as well. That was
that
was announced simultaneously for what, yeah, with Switch and the other stuff. You know, not unlike Spyro or Sega Genesis stuff. You know, Capcom, I guess, you know, again, might have felt the kind of been a bit sort of singed by some of these, the Disney Afternoon collection and stuff.
Yes.
They did not put it on Switch straight away. Like, okay well, that's not happening again. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff coming. You know,
not all of it is stuff on Switch.
Yeah, and not all of it is things that would kind of fall into the purview of Virtual Console the way it was, in terms of, like, okay, it's something that was released at home, you know, and in a lot of cases on a Nintendo platform. Like, you know, you're talking about a lot of arcade games here.
Right. And it's, I mean, even the stuff that's come out on the Arcade Archives, that was Nintendo stuff. It's very much focused on arcade games. I mean, it's in the name, obviously, but it's like, you know, an arcade Super Mario Brothers. It does feel like maybe at this point, like, the idea of just like, here is an NES game, it's $5. Here's a whole suite of NES games. They're all $5. Maybe that isn't. It doesn't seem to hold.
Yeah,
serve.
I mean that's where if you are talking about the Nintendo Online subscription, including access to a catalog of games, however big that catalog might be, I could kind of see that as, you know, the two kind of approaches, you know, this kind of bifurcation of Virtual Console into two approaches, which is kind of collections of games that you can pull out at retail put at the eShop, where you bundled stuff together that you think has a certain amount of cachet, and those will do well. And then on the other end, the kind of the catalogue is where it's like, okay, well, we're kind of getting people's money on a recurring basis because it's access to a whole bunch of games that probably wouldn't sell that well a standalone.
Golf.
You've got to think, look, they've had many years worth of data now on different platforms. You know, go back to Wii, then you've got, you know, a 3DS Virtual Console, Wii U Virtual Console, all the different consoles that those covered, you know, all, you know, all the way from, you know, NES to DS, you know, really, you know, covering a lot of time, a lot of different kind of, you know, the demographics involved, you know, the time frames in terms of nostalgia and all that. All that kind of data must have been able to give them somewhat of a good picture of, like, you know, is it worth doing that again? Is it worth relying on people to just sort of buy individual games? You know, even if, you know, once you get beyond some of the kind of deep cut, into the deep cuts, you know, it might be very few people that are actually interested at that point. And in fact, if you bundle things together, either in a specific collection or as part of a subscription service, you're far more likely to actually kind of get people exposed to stuff that maybe they wouldn't explicitly, you know, expressly have paid money for.
I mean, yeah, you can see that on the SNK collection. Yeah. Like, there's, I pretty much heard of everything on this list, but I would have never really thought to buy, I don't think, Psycho Soldier.
Or, like I said, the NES version of Athena. The arcade version of Athena. But when I look at it in this context, I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. I'd like to see what that looks like. But as a standalone game, I would never buy that.
No, but I would have bought Alpha Mission, Crystallis, Ikari Warriors, and maybe 2, and gotten out. But like with all this other stuff, I'm going to at least play it and see it, and because I want to have this stuff. So in the end, maybe they didn't get as much per game out of me as they could have got, but they still got more.
We're suckers, James. That's what I feel like.
I'm not a sucker. Like I like SNK. I'm happy buying these games.
Yeah, true. You are an SNK guy. True.
I don't want Prehistoric Isle because guess what? It's kind of eh. But I'm gonna own it, and I guess I'll stream it or something. I know its title screen looks like absolute garbage because it's like a really poorly rendered dinosaur melting into the ground. But this is maybe a different way to make that price higher and get more money out of people and be able to build things like a premium package you can put in stores. Like they're building this like SNK anthology collection that they're going to sell. I'm probably not going to buy it because that's definitely a game I'd want digitally, but it's not really, it's more about like using it as more of a marketing tool and like a brand tool. And like, this is who we are. We're selling our image versus like we're selling these individual games that you can buy for $5 because these games are being wrapped up around who these games are from, not just sort of generically thrown out onto shelves. And it keeps the money in the hands of the publishers. And so, you know, I'm actually okay with that up until the point where you start dealing with games that have become orphaned and it becomes more difficult perhaps to marshal them into a collection to release them. But maybe that happens. Maybe somebody buys up the rights to these dead companies' games and like the corpses of NES collection. I don't know what you'd call it, but puts them out there because there were virtual console games from dead companies because somebody went out and got the rights for that game.
Right, they were passionate and they wanted to make it happen. Right,
right. But if you're going to go with the collection route, that becomes a much bigger ask.
Of course, I mean, collections, you know, is funny in a way because collections very much predated Virtual Console, especially with the CD consoles.
Oh, yeah.
You think of Sony, you know, all those Namco kind of museum things and Sunsoft, you know, and Mega Man. And like, there were loads of, like, oh, CD's got a bunch of memory. We can easily just put, you know, a whole bunch of these games together. You know, at an affordable price, and people will buy them. You know, that was kind of the first, you know, because Nintendo, for a long time, you have to kind of remember now, you know, were not so sure about being able to trade off old games. You know,
they put it in Animal Crossing for free.
For free, exactly. And then, that started to change with reissuing NES games or Famicom games on GBA. And then, you know, we got to Virtual Console and all that. But yeah, it's always, it kind of feels like it's just kind of, we're coming back around to that place again. You know, where we just these sort of themed collections that can kind of sell. But like I said, the other prong of it, I think, will be, leaving the online part of it out for now, but you know, the Nintendo will leverage their extremely rich library of old games, and you know, the catalog approach, or the, you know, the sort of subscription approach, is something that you know, they haven't done yet, and it could prove, you know, more fruitful than the Virtual Console kind of did. Although there's always a lot of variables in terms of, you know, on Wii, it had a great lineup of Virtual Console games, and you know, a lot of interest from a bunch of different quarters, even if there were some holes. But the Wii Shop channel left a lot to be desired, the, you know, in terms of discoverability, in all that, in terms of, like, you know, like I said, there was never, pretty much never, any sales to remind people that these games had come out. Once they had come out, they were pretty much buried, which led us to, you know, Virtual Consoles on Wii U and 3DS of, like, let's just release them slower. You know, like, it's I don't know whether all the, I still kind of feel like the Virtual Console approach, I certainly wouldn't keep the Virtual Console branding. I think that's a, you know, we've discussed this before, that's a relic at this point. That's a, you know, vestige.
Yeah, they're just games.
Yeah, just old games. There's no need for this kind of weird umbrella term that's a bit abstract. But, you know, I do feel like there's a Virtual Console approach that could be sort of tweaked and done better than they've done it yet. Although, you know, to the discoverability point, you know, the Switch eShop isn't exactly any great shakes in that department yet, no. Either. I mean, how is there not just like a banner or a category for arcade archives? And there's like 100 of them, isn't there?
Because what if you just want to see them organically?
Doesn't that merit having, you know, I mean, to be fair to the Wii U eShop, like, you get banners for, you know, the different consoles represented on the Virtual Console. Sometimes they'll put genre ones in there, like Metroidvania, and, you know, which is a fairly sort of niche genre, and that kind of thing. You know, I mean, whereas Switch is so bare bones at the minute, I certainly wouldn't want, like, a, you know, traditional Virtual Console approach applied to this shop right now. But hypothetically, I think they could do it, you know, a fair bit better than they've done it before, and maybe have more success. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's what they'll do. I think the subscription and the catalog and you know, trying it that way is probably what we're looking at.
So I don't know if I guess it's kind of on topic. Apparently, someone on Reset Era has revealed the reason why we never got Contra on the Virtual Console.
I've heard a little bit about this. It sounds bizarre.
It's weird. Yeah, so I'm reading here, and apparently this information has been
sourcing now.
Well, it says that the information has been cleared by moderators. I don't know what that means, but I guess, yeah, I don't know. Apparently, when the Wii's Virtual Console went live, Nintendo sent certain third-party publishers a list with all their previous games.
This
and
is
asked,
accurate. This part is accurate, but this is also semi-publicly known.
Right, and asked which of those games they wanted to have reissued on the Virtual Console. The reason why Contra was never added to the Virtual Console? A clerical error. Someone forgot to checkmark the game on the list before sending it back. Years later, a person in Konami's digital department wanted to correct this error and resubmit the list to include Contra and the Genesis titles, meaning here Castlevania Bloodlines and Contra Hardcore and Rocket Knight, etc. But before that could happen, that person was no longer in a position to go forward with it. So that's the end of the source info. So I don't know. Maybe the Virtual Console, like, maybe all these publishers are going ahead with their own efforts because the Virtual Console was kind of weird and, you know, perhaps not super well managed.
Well, I mean, they need to go ahead with their own efforts anyway because they want to be on all the platforms except for SNK, weirdly.
Right.
And to do that, you can't go like, well, we're just going to do Nintendo's Virtual Console. And so at some point, it may just be easier to say, okay, well, we'll just make a Switch version instead of we'll fuck around with whatever Nintendo wants us to do to get on a Virtual Console service. Like, because you're not going to be able to sell these games individually if I can go buy a collection of these games on another platform. So it's just Nintendo is, people want Nintendo to get parity congratulations, you have it.
Yeah, well, I don't know, because on the PlayStation 3, on PSN, you could buy a lot of individual Genesis titles, and you also had the Sega Genesis collection.
Yeah.
So SNK is just the same. SNK put all their Samurai Warrior games on the Wii Virtual Console, but also released a collection of them. They did the same thing with Metal Slug. SNK is a fucking holding company, and crazy shit happens sometimes out of them. Although now they're making games again, because this world doesn't make any sense. I don't know. But I mean, yeah, but you don't see that happening right now on the PS4. Like there are some classic games on the PS4, and there's some on the there's more on the Xbox as a backwards compatibility, I think. But I mean, everybody seems to be going this other route now, and I guess it's just easier.
Yeah, I mean, I do worry a bit about how many, you know, the fact that I think Virtual Console there were gaps in it, of course, and you know, perhaps some for bizarre reasons like what we've just heard. I mean, it is one of these things where, you know, we always used to kind of wonder what was behind these things, and, you know, jokes about throwing darts at a board or whatever, but it's one of these things where you could almost come up with anything and you might believe it, because it's like, well, it had to be something weird, so maybe. But you're like, whatever the foibles of it were, you do feel like, because you didn't have to have like a hook, you know, of like, okay, I can tie this into that, this, that, the other. You could get games that were kind of really just weird products of their time, or just really singular works that might have been really obscure, but cool games that would just come out, you know. And you know, something like, was it Euphoria, which was a Hibareka game in Japan. Mm-hmm. You know, it's pretty difficult to imagine that ever emerging out of a collection, but, you know, it was a cool addition to the virtual
console. I actually disagree. I think if you're doing a collection from that publisher, they might slide that in as a weird, like, one-off inclusion. Like,
maybe. It's just, the problem is, it did only come out in Europe originally, in the West. It wasn't in America, so it just seems like that would be the kind of thing that would slip through the cracks of a, you know, if somebody was making a collection that's probably going to be aimed primarily at an American market.
Yeah. Well, all right, we're going to do the last question real quick, because it's pretty easy. Guillaume, I'd like you to read it.
Sean writes, hey guys, long time, first time.
Long time listener, first time writer.
Yes. what if, rather than a Mario-themed amusement park, Nintendo signed a deal with Universal to make a real-world, all-encompassing Nintendo Land? What rides or events would you like to see? An F-Zero roller coaster? A Kirby pie eating contest, a cubivore petting zoo. The possibilities are endless. And shit, bonus points for a Nintendo. Oh, sorry. The possibilities are endless and shit. Bonus points for a Nintendo themed food item.
See, which now I'm wondering.
Endless and shit.
Yeah, that's right. Are they endless and shit, or endless and shit?
You know what? I'm gonna go with the second.
Yeah.
I've been to enough theme parks as a child to know that it's essentially just a nightmare.
Come on, I mean, really, the biggest thing you gotta have is, I know they do like the Japanese like Mario Karting in real life thing, but you've gotta have a Mario Kart experience where you actually hitting people with shells and screwing them up in a go-kart.
And live turtles, yes.
Yes, live turtles preferably.
It's all baby park.
Well, it pretty much has to be, wouldn't it?
Music is actually coming in, the headphones built into the helmets.
It's probably not going to be Rainbow Road on the moon like Mario Kart 7, is it? Although, yeah, no. Baby park is a lot more doable.
But it's got to be the music, or it's not baby park.
But yeah, James, helmets can be removed. I say they must blast it from speakers, the music. There's no way that people should be able to escape.
There are also speakers, but it's also in the helmet, because it's got to be right next to your ear.
And obviously it's the Slap 7 version.
Oh, yeah. I'll give a serious answer, because I'm capable of that sometimes. One of my favorite attractions as a child at Disney World was the Haunted Mansion, because it's not particularly good. Like, it's not like the most high tech thing in the park, and it's been around forever, but it does some really neat stuff. Like, it's got a neat effect to it. And obviously, the Luigi's Mansion parallel is way too easy. Way too easy. And so you could just do a knockoff one of those, and Universal doesn't have one of those right now. So there you go. That one's easy and decent. And I think I stole somebody else's, so that's why I went first. I threw an elbow to get out there first.
I guess maybe some sort of arena, like balloon trip, balloon fight arena, where they just tie balloons to you, and you got to duke it out with other people. And pop their balloons.
Oh, man, if they could use hydraulics to, like, have an arms experience.
There you go.
Like, actually slapping people in the face or, like, 15 feet away.
Now, wasn't there, like, some sort of product that people were kind of, saying, like, oh, that's just like arms, around the time that, arms was announced? There was something. There was some toy, like some boxing gloves with that stretch.
Weird.
Yeah. Anyway, so I'm sure people can look that up, but it's not that far fetched. Apparently, some people have thought about it.
All right, John, give us an attraction.
An attraction would be something like a water park that's Super Mario themed, where fish jump out of the water and hit you as you're running across bridges.
John immediately goes to like danger. I thought you were going to go the stronger danger and go, oh, it's a water park that's Super Mario Sunshine themed.
Yeah. I don't want to kill anybody. So
No one attends because they can't manage to walk through the door without the camera doing something stupid.
Yep. Then they fall to their death. Mm-hmm. So we don't want that.
Volcano hot tub attraction. Yeah.
I'm just picturing John's attraction, just like, like people dressed in blue, you're not supposed to see them, and they just got buckets of fish, and they're throwing it at you as you're going through.
Oh, they're jumping autonomously, honest. Yeah.
So what's the Splatoon attraction? Because there's got to be one.
Oh, God, yeah, that's a great... I mean, yeah, so it's just some sort of all-out paintball war scenario.
Yeah.
It's made for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Paintballs hurt, though, and that would really limit
they
your
do, They do. Mm. I remember once getting hit in paintball. It wasn't painful. And putting my hand up so I had been shot, and then my hand getting shot immediately.
Yes!
And that really was painful and pointless. But
well, obviously you have
it's
to be
an allegory.
Kind of... Yeah. I guess the arena has to be like you being like waist deep into mud or something so that you can go and hide and sneak up on people and then, emerge.
I mean, the Splatoon water park is probably in there. Because, like, it's, you'd be able to have them float around and stuff because tubes, like, you're actually sliding in squid form. But, like, that's not super on point with what Splatoon is. You could have it, like, you can spray colored water at people, but it would have to not stain. Because you wouldn't want to actually stain people's clothes. That would get you a bad rap. But there's definitely something in there that works. So
I can also see it being kind of a sanitary nightmare.
Oh, yeah. Cleaning would be a disaster if it didn't just wash off.
But also, I mean, like a cesspool, like a bacteria.
Welcome to every
place.
Water park ever, Gil.
Yeah, yes.
Well, I guess.
Yeah. But you could also have like hoses where, or like you could spray down, like not like fire hoses where you're like knocking people over, but
No, I was thinking like squirt guns.
Yeah, yeah. Squirt guns, and then like you could go up on high and spray people from up above with like kind of like water launchers sort of thing. That'd be kind of cool.
I think they've already covered Donkey Kong. Like it's a roller coaster. Donkey Kong is a roller coaster. They've already shown us that in Nintendo Land itself.
Maybe. Yeah, it's true.
But it makes sense because you could do a pretty solid jungle themed minecarts and all that stuff and roll through it because there's already a minecart roller coaster. I've ridden it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Disney World already has one. We know what it looks like. Zelda's tougher.
Yeah.
I mean, you could.
We have the Nintendo Land game to inspire us, I guess.
You
could
beat
be
up
some
stuffed
sort
animals.
Of. and some sort of kind of fake adventure, and you're just beating up mascots and costumes.
I don't know. You could maybe do something like sort of like a Wind Waker sort of thing, where like you hop in a raft with people and then like float down a river something like that, maybe.
And stuff
like,
just happens around you?
Yeah.
Kind of like the Jurassic Park boat ride?
Kind of, yeah. Something like that.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. All right, so we got to do some food real quick before we wrap up.
Mushrooms.
Honestly. Yeah, mushrooms. Everybody's taking mushrooms.
There's loads of stuff in Breath of the Wild. That's the, you know, loads of dish ideas. Mm-hmm.
I was going to go with the Pokemon-themed restaurant, which gets very dire very quickly. Because on more than one occasion in the show, we see people eating meat, which means they are eating Pokemon. And I like to imagine a Pokemon-themed restaurant has to deal with that when they do menu design.
The old sweet, sweet rump of Miltank.
That's right. Oh.
That's something that I really, this is one aspect of the part that I really want the Japanese to, you know, take to run, basically, because when I went to kind of Nintendo of Montreal, Nintendo of Canada events in Montreal, it was always kind of same catering place that was giving us completely unimaginative, like, I don't know, cupcakes with some sugar metal of Luigi on them or something, and not great.
I can vouch. I have eaten at a theme restaurant in Japan, and they get a little into it.
Yeah.
Nice. I would say that the idea of the Splatoon restaurant just serves squid. It's Ika and Takoyaki all day at the Splatoon restaurant.
Are you sure you don't want the waiters to just, like, shoot, desserts into your open mouth?
I didn't say I don't want that.
Okay.
That's someone's fetish, Guillaume. Please respect them.
I am.
Okay. Anybody else got any horrible ideas you want to throw out there? We're only taking bad ideas now, just to be clear.
Fetish?
Come on, give me something.
It's more in the ballpark of what Guillaume said he doesn't like, or just the actual Yoshi's cookies, or that kind of thing. Or I guess you could have an activity for making them where for some reason you match things up and then that causes them to come out of an oven.
It's a cookie bar.
It'd be quite an elaborate sort of setup for it. There you go.
No, it's like one of those build-your-own restaurants, only it's cookies. So you'd have somebody behind the counter. You go, like, oh, I want that on there and that. And then you'd get charged at the end based on how much crap you put on it, times 75 because you're in a theme park. That seems doable enough. And then unfortunately I can't make the joke anymore, but the next thing you have a Metroid attraction, but it's not there.
It's
coming. It's still a few years off of it.
Pikmin 4 attraction. It's just people talk to you that, no, we've already built it. It's done. And there's just nothing behind them.
Yeah.
It's
I think the Pikmin thing should be just a VR type of, 3D kind of experience where it's just you being Pikmin sized and how terrifying that world would be to actually live in from that perspective.
I like the idea, though, that they do the Pikmin event is you've been recast as Olimar, but just like Olimar, you didn't ask for this to happen, so you're just walking around the park and all of a sudden a bunch of people in Pikmin costumes run up to you and then just follow you, and you can't communicate with them, they're just there. I like the idea that they're just, I guess Olimar didn't ask for Pikmin, they showed up. What if that happened in the park and you could be Olimar?
And you could throw them. They have to be small enough to. Yep. Yeah.
I mean, you could have like.
So they have to be children. Yeah,
for sure.
Little people.
You could have like pilot wings bungee jumping or something like that, maybe?
Mm.
Get
or like
fired
a
out of a cannon
kind of thing, or like demon fire.
You know what? No, fire people out of a cannon. Done.
Getting fired out of a cannon into Mount Rushmore. That's the only acceptable pilot wings attraction.
Yep.
To be fair, you could have a Mario attraction on being fired out of a cannon and a Donkey Kong one.
Yeah, there's a lot of that in Nintendo stuff, admittedly.
I'm sure there's a Zelda one somewhere we could use as well. There actually is Snowpeak. There you go. All right. Well, that is going to do it for email and for the show this week. If you have a question, you can send it to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Greg, what is our end music this week?
Well, we have a request from Aero, who wants to mark the fact that Phantasy Star Online 2 Cloud went live on Switches in Japan earlier this month. So he had a request from the original Phantasy Star Online, which he notes is kind of famous for not only being one of the GameCube's only online titles, but also for giving us the controller with the keyboard in the middle of it, which is it's a wonderful thing. I know for a fact it's featured in RFN Chapter Art once during my time doing it.
I did it once too.
I can only imagine it's been more than once in reality. Because it's just, yeah, I mean, you kind of have to if it comes up. So,
I think I did it once when I filled in for Guillaume as well, so I think there's at least three instances of it at this point.
It's a remarkable object.
The Nintendo GameCube ASCII keyboard controller is the name of the product.
So the music request that Aero wanted to mark this occasion is called A Song for Eternal Story, a theme from the original Phantasy Star Online, which sure as hell does sound like an online, one way to sum up an online RPG to me.
We're never gonna get Phantasy Star Online. It's never gonna happen. The current one. It's just sad because it's been on the PC forever, and it'd be really fun to play that game. But no, nope, denied forever. Thanks, Sega. All right, well, it's time for us to go plan our theme park and contact our attorneys and make sure that we're not gonna get sued. So, bye, everybody.
Bye.
Later.
Bye-bye.